Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and I'm a journalist. Join me on my new podcast, But We Loved, coming May 15th, where queer elders recount the amazing history they've lived through.
In the middle of Wall Street, they stopped traffic. They were doing a die-in.
And in the process, share little gems of wisdom for the next generation.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
You can listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And, you know, Julie, we recently did an episode about cyber immortality.
Yes.
And about the idea of preserving who we are in electronic form. And we got into ideas of, like, what is the mind? What is the soul? And something that came up in the research that we didn't really go into was how the more modern medical science analyzed how damage to the brain changes the expression of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
That initially caused a lot of concern with people over how we would continue to view the soul or even who we are. Because the idea of, you know, hey, if I am my soul, I am this person.
Mm-hmm.
But then if something can just like, if I get kicked in the head by a horse, that can change who I am. Does that change what my soul is? You get into a lot of tricky area there.
Right.
And it's interesting that we have the little turn of phrase, change your mind. We're always changing our mind about something, and our mind is continually changing. The person we are a year ago, again, is different than the person we are now, and the person we're going to be tomorrow is different than the person talking right now.
Right. So, and certainly things act upon us at times to change our minds for us, right?
Right. Our mind is a complicated system, and every day something changes, something upgrades. If, you know, how your computer is constantly needing to reboot because it just got new upgrades and updates have been applied. Well, updates are always being applied.
Right.
And occasionally your mind, like a computer, can spill some coffee in it or it'll get a virus or name any conceivable computer related catastrophe and it could also happen to your brain. So it's really illuminating to look at some examples of catastrophe happening to the human brain,
mm-hmm.
and what the effects are, how external or internal stimuli alters the form of the mind, and then therefore alters the, if you want to say it this way, the expression of our soul.
Right, and going back to like the neuroscience of it too, we've talked about neuroplasticity, but mm-hmm. how your mind changes in that way, how it may take up for one part of the other, or you know how it might be completely changed forever. So,
it's kind of like it's like a new car, and then it gets sideswiped or something,
right.
and uh, But we got to keep driving this car, so let's find out ways to make it work. Oh, I can't, nobody can sit in the passenger side seat anymore because it's caved in. That means more people have to go in the back seat. Things like, same things of that nature, except with the brain.
Right.
X channel isn't working anymore, so we're going to have to send more data through Y channel. That's overly simplified, but it's kind of what happens.
So we're going to look at a couple of examples of how this has played out in specific cases, particularly with a guy, a very unfortunate guy, I should say, named Phineas Gage.
Yes, Phineas Gage is, this is pretty awesome stuff. And I say that because right now I'm playing the new Mortal Kombat game at home when I can scroll away a few moments here and there. And, there are these moments in the game where you'll build up this bonus meter and then everything will go into an X-ray mode and you'll see like your character like stabbing another character in the face or something and like, you know, something entering one side of the skull and going out the other. And that's exactly what happens with Phineas Gage back in 1848. All right. This guy's a 25-year-old foreman for a New England railroad. He's laying track in Vermont. And each day he goes through this particular job. It's like, you know, day in, day out, he drills a hole in a large rock. He pours in blasting powder. He lays the fuse, and then his assistant covers the explosives with sand.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then he takes this 3.5-foot-long, inch quarter thick what's called a tamping rod, the steel rod, or iron rod, and he tamps the explosives down, and then he lights the fuse and he runs for cover. All right, so, you know, like any act that you do over and over again, your mind will start to wander, and it's easy to make mistakes. It's that whole, like, the more vegetables I cut, the more possible it is that I'll cut off my finger sort of thing.
You should always tuck your fingers in, by the way.
Yes.
You'll never cut yourself if you tuck your fingers in.
Huh.
There you go.
Interesting. I will try that next time and avoid mutilation. But so he gets distracted, old Phineas Gage, and he begins tamping the blasting powder before his assistant adds the sand.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly there's an explosion, all right? And it fires that, like, the explosion blasts this rod straight up, all right? And it connects with his face, just under his left cheek, all right? And then it skewers up behind his left eye, destroying it, both the eye and the entire front portion of his left brain hemisphere. And then the rod goes through the top of his skull, exits through the top of his skull, and continues to fly on through the air and lands several yards away. And so then here's Gage standing with this, this entry hole under his cheek, this exit hole through the top of his skull, like a bit of his scalp has flapped back, you know, to emerge.
And, so standing, he's completely conscious.
Yeah.
He's talking.
Yeah, he's not
walking.
Dead. That's important to underscore here, because this sounds like just a death blow.
Yeah.
You just had a metal rod dynamited through your skull, through your face and out the top of your skull.
Yeah, a 3-foot-8-inch metal rod.
Yeah.
With a more than an inch diameter, by the way.
Yeah, but almost immediately after the accident, he's conscious, he's talking, and he insists on walking to the cart that's going to take him down to town to be treated. And along the ride, he's lucid, he's rational during the ride, and he's able to speak with his attending physician, a Dr. John Martin Harlow.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Harlow treats him and Gage is actually able to return home to New Hampshire 10 weeks later.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, just so everybody understands, so he bled for 2 days. So, and then he'd had an infection. And what Dr. Harlow did is that he wasn't able to suture the hole in his head, right?
Right.
But he was able to cover it up, and that's what got the infection, and it actually rendered him semi-conscious, for about a month. And in fact, his family started to prepare a coffin for him because they didn't think that he was going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
But then the infection resolved itself after the fifth week, and he seemed to be completely fine. Seemed to be, right? I mean, we know that he lost his eyesight, his left eye.
Yeah.
And then some of his motor abilities on his left hand, side of his face. But again, here he is. Like he can still talk, walk, and cogitate.
Yeah. Because we're talking, the brain portion here is the prefrontal cortex. And this is, the anterior part of the frontal lobe of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And, generally it has to do with motor and premotor areas.
Right.
But let's talk about just how Gage was before the accident. In addition to having a little more brain and one more eye, he was also supposedly a pretty, you know, efficient, capable employee, a decent guy to hang around.
Right. You know? He was one of the best foremen, they said.
Yeah, yeah. He was a good dude. His only fault was, you know, one out of maybe thousands of times he got a little distracted while
using
working
a tamping iron. Yeah.
But after this accident, once he's, you know, he's up and about really and recovered from this bout of unconsciousness, they find, that he is fitful. He's
swearing like a drunken sailor all the time.
It's like he's got Tourette's or something. And he doesn't seem to care. And
he's childlike and bullying.
Yeah.
Right?
He doesn't seem to have, like, he's lost this ability, this like ethical, moral, governor in his mind.
That's right. He's lost his social inhibitions, essentially,
right.
Which we know now that the prefrontal cortex is sort of tamping that kind of down for us, right? So that we're not all screaming at each other all the time. So, and we know that that's where the tamping iron went through. But of course, you know, back in the day, they did not know this. And it was actually Dr. Harlow who was observing all of this and saying, you know, my patient seems to be physically fine. Like there doesn't seem to be any, neurological damage, but I think that his personality has changed as a result of this accident. And people were like, they just summarily dismissed him. And the reason for that is because phrenology was really in vogue during those days. And it was thought that the personality was influenced by the size and the shape and even like the bumps on your skull. So they couldn't conceive of how your brain could be changed. I guess you could say internally, they thought it was sort of set in stone in the structure. And that your personality was sort of set in the structure of your brain. So Dr. Harlow was dismissed on this count while another doctor came in and said, oh no, this person is completely fine. I don't know what Dr. Harlow is talking about.
Yeah. Cause I mean, his intelligence was still fine. He in so many other respects, he seemed perfectly normal. Studies have suggested that the frontal lobe actually has separate functional areas, one in the underbelly of the frontal lobes and along the midline between the two brain hemispheres that supposedly specialize for making social decisions in an emotional context. And a second, more to the side of the forehead, seems to specialize in abstract calculation, other kinds of decision making that call upon lesser emotions. So, this is basic, like the case of Gage here, in addition to being a really grisly,
grueling,
awful accident. Yeah, it's also
Mortal Kombat like.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat like incident. It's also just a classic case of frontal cortex malfunction. And even these early studies about his condition were really influential in neuropsychiatry. And played a crucial role in our discovery of behavioral syndromes resulting from frontal lobe dysfunction. And people continue to have dysfunctions in this area of the brain today, generally not due to dynamite-related rod insertion in the skull, but there are people that have dysfunction in this area, and they perform well in intelligence tests, speak normally, make new memories in association, and use logic just fine. But you'll also see similar disruptions in the expression of who they are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he basically sort of had an unwitting lobotomy, which ended up really helping science understand later on how the brain functions.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
And like you said, the other parts of the brain just kind of sort of will function fine, but then you've got him, you know, losing his job eventually because he became, I guess you could say that he became so, ballistic and not the best foreman anymore.
He was kind of unemployable. Like he worked for a circus kind of a thing for a while.
Yeah, he took it on the road.
Yeah, he went to Chile. And then finally, in February 1860, he began to experience epileptic seizures. And that led to his death on May 21st, 1860.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's famous now. We're talking about him now, many, many years after his death. And you can even see his skull and the rod at the Warren Anatomical Museum in Harvard Medical School's Countway Library of Medicine.
I've seen the photo. It's actually pretty cool because, I mean, if you look at his skull and you look at that 3-foot, 8-inch rod and just amazing to think that could have happened and he would have survived it.
Yeah, it really makes you rethink I mean, you know, life is fragile. Biological life is fragile and brief, but it's amazing some of the damage that we can, that can be inflicted upon us and we still survive. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And another good example. And this came out, we actually spotted this when we were doing research for the podcast about music changing your brain. And this was about a guy named Tony Cesoria. And in 1994, he was 42 years old, and he's this orthopedic surgeon was in a phone booth when the phone was struck by lightning. It entered his foot, and then it exited his head, and he was blown backwards by the force. And then the weird thing is, as if that weren't weird enough, is that he had like a big near-death experience. Big near-death meaning that he was sitting there watching as, you know, according to him, as someone gave him CPR, and he was feeling this sort of like oneness with the universe and was submitting himself, and he was actually trying to say to the person performing CPR, please don't do this. And he could see his mother-in-law, and, you know, and all of a sudden he was brought back in his words.
Now, it's worth noting that I think we've discussed in past podcast and maybe in the future that all these near-death experiences, there are a lot of compelling scientific explanations for what's happening. So we're not attributing any kind of divine or supernatural occurrence here.
No, but he is certainly.
Yes,
this is a big thing for Cesoria and how he explains what happened to him and actually how he continues to live his life. So what happened then is that he seemed to be fine, and actually they tried to call an ambulance, but he said, no, I'm fine.
It's like,
oddly
yeah,
enough, I've been struck by lightning.
People
but
get struck by lightning or have rods fired through their head, and they're like, whoa, don't call an ambulance. I'm good. Let me walk.
And he's a surgeon. He's an orthopedic surgeon, and he has a PhD in neuroscience.
Okay? Yeah, so this is no stupid guy.
He's like, he knows what happened to him. But he says, you know, I feel kind of fuzzy or whatever, but let's not do this. And so later on, he does get checked out. He gets an EEG, and it shows there is no cardiac arrest, right? He gets an MRI. Everything seems okay. About 4 weeks later, during this 48-hour period, he just has this incredible, insatiable desire to hear piano music.
And previously, he's more of a Zep fan, right?
I mean,
he's in the classic
rock
and,
yeah.
And you, it probably doesn't even have NPR programmed into his car's stereo system.
I bet he does secretly. But I bet most of the time, right, he's doing Zeppelin.
Yeah, or if he turns in, he's just tuning in for like Marketplace or whatever, and then, you know, instantly clicks off when the classical starts playing.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, this is someone who never had sort of a predilection for classical music before, but all of a sudden is just completely taken by it, obsessed with it, has to play it, has to hear it, gets sheet music, begins to learn it. Serendipitously, his babysitter asks if he can store her piano for him. So all of a sudden the piano shows up, he starts playing piano. And you have to understand he's resumed his job, right? He's had a little bit of temporary memory loss. Like he can't remember some of the surgical procedures, the names for him, but then that all falls away and he's once again whole in the sense that he can perform his jobs to the best of his faculties.
Except he has this maddening desire to play the piano and compose piano music.
Yeah. So, I mean, he literally runs home from his job and that is what he does until, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning. And then he gets up again, I don't know, 3 hours later, goes and performs surgery. Yay. And comes back and does it again.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt here that there's something odd going on.
Yes.
That before this, he never could have cared less about classical music, playing it, so on and so forth. And then he has a dream that he's in a tux and he's performing in front of an audience, a piece that he wrote. And he begins himself to be flooded by compositions. So he begins composing.
Wow.
It's insane. And he is actually talking to Dr. Oliver Sacks about this, who's the author of Musicophilia and other books, neuroscientist as well. So Sacks was completely taken by this case because he could not figure out what had happened. And let's just kind of step back for a second and remember that he was struck by lightning.
Yes.
So obviously something tinkered with him. And
The brain is basically an electronic system.
Yeah.
And electronic impulses are a vital part of how it operates. So you're disrupting that with a bolt of lightning.
Yeah. Yeah, not just in the a bolt of lightning, which could be as high as 30,000 amperes with 1 million or more volts and could last, you know, something like 1/100th millisecond. So, yeah, we're talking about getting your brain fried. And it's amazing to think, too, that this happened and that he's pretty much intact, you know, plus this obsession. When something like 25% of lightning strikes to individuals result in fatalities, and then those who do survive, 75% sustain permanent damage. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this guy is sort of like a unicorn among, you know, lightning
survivors. Yeah, the damage he sustained is like the best possible damage. You know, it's like how many people out there wish they could be struck by lightning and it would wake up some artistic, creative, you know, just, I mean, because even, assuming even he... I mean, he's really good at playing piano and composing. But even if he wasn't, like the idea that lightning turned on this new area of his life that he just tremendously enjoys. You know, even if he just really sucked at playing piano, he would at least be enjoying it.
You're right. It wouldn't matter, right? Because he's getting so much out of it. And I did actually wondered about that because I went online to listen. And I thought, oh, no, I wonder if he's put all this effort into it. And it's kind of like my dog has, please, you know. But he's actually, you're right. He's a very good pianist. And does compose his own original material. So it's kind of hard to get some sort of medical revelation out of this because Sesoria, as we talked about before, he attributes this to some sort of, mystical religious experience, and he doesn't want to be studied, because he doesn't want to lose that feeling.
Which again is kind of maddening because he's a surgeon. He knows how the body works. He knows how the brain works. And so it doesn't seem like there would be much room, for disillusionment. It seems like he would already basically have all the answers, right there before him.
Yeah. And that's what Sachs says too. This is a guy who has a PhD in neuroscience. He knows on some level that there's a basis for what has happened neurologically. And you can tell that Sachs really wants to get in there and like study because he's sitting there thinking, you know, there's this one clip of Sachs and he's sitting there talking about it. He's like, there's something that happened in that 48-hour period. And then he even talks to about, you know, we've seen correlations that parts of the brain and the temporal lobe, can give rise to a mystical or euphoric feeling. We know this, when that part of the brain is stimulated. And in fact, when we sometimes talk about religious experiences or even experiences with music, we know that that part of the brain is going nuts, right?
Right.
So it's fascinating. I understand where he's coming from. I mean, this is, you know, with Sesoria, that this is something that has happened to him and this is his great love and obsession in his life. And he doesn't want to look under the covers and see what's going on. But at the same time, it's like,
and why piano music? Like, think of all the less appealing things he could have been struck with. Like, what if he was like struck by lightning? He wakes up and he's like, I've got to become a prop comic. Give me some watermelons and a chest and a hammer. I'm gonna hit.
I need
the road.
An axe.
Yeah,
yeah, and a big mustache.
Could have been much worse.
Yeah, I know it is. It's fascinating. So
it also brings to mind. You know, we're talking about brain is an electronic system. Lightning is electricity, disrupts it. It also brings to mind transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS.
Yeah.
And this is it's kind of like a much lighter, controlled, and far less severe technique that is actually used in treatment of some cases of depression and other anomalies. You'll have what basically looks like a little rod, or a little paddle, and you move it next to a person's skull in just the right area, and it produces magnetic fields to stimulate nerve cells in the brain. And this can, if used correctly, can improve symptoms of depression. So you have people that will go in, you know, it's like people who have, generally it's people who have a number of mental issues, and you don't want to actually go to the extremes of using electroshock, which is a more severe version of a little more akin to lightning than this. But they'll go in and they'll get a TMS treatment for like half an hour. And, they found that they can actually be pretty successful.
Yeah. And this is, actually, if I remember correctly from John Horgan's book, Rational Mysticism, he goes to Dr. Michael Persinger, who has the God machine, right?
Oh, yes.
Which is along the same lines as like this helmet that you put on.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that you could create these spiritual, mystical experiences by messing with the magnets and the temporal lobe. And we've talked about this before too with alien abductions, that Susan Blackmore, who has looked into this before, actually she herself went and had her temporal lobes manipulated. This sounds kind of dirty. And had a feeling that there was someone in the room, actually, and had this sort of experience, that had some of the hallmarks of alien abduction. So we already know, that there's some manipulation that can happen here.
Yeah, it comes down too to the whole idea that there's the world of our thoughts, and then there is the external world, and some would argue that there's really only one world, and that's the one in our brain. That everything we perceive, everything we feel, really takes place in the back corner of the fleshy electronic globe that is in our skull. So you start messing with that, you give it a shock, you fire a rod through it, and you're changing the world as you perceive it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Because, some of that sounds kind of straightforward, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, how do you experience, you can't experience someone else's view, right?
You can
only experience your own. So, it would make sense that, you know, even though there's these commonalities of our existence, if you screw up the wiring a little bit, then a lot of that will get out the window.
Yeah, it's really, in a way, it's kind of an outrageous overstatement of the obvious, but yeah, when a horse kicks somebody in the skull, it's not simply a matter of changing that person or changing that person's mind, but it changes the universe from that one person's perspective.
Right.
And ultimately, that one person, that's the individual perspective is the only perspective. We can never know another person's mind completely.
Right.
And, yeah, so it changes the world.
And Oliver Sacks, he has a book, is it called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat?
Yes.
I believe,
yes.
Yeah. And he talks a little bit more about this, right? Like mm-hmm. these sort of assumptions that we make about, you know, a glass is a glass or a pen is a pen can, you know, be quite jumbled up in the brain when things go wrong.
Yeah, the line between what we call sanity and what we call insanity is often far, far briefer and far more fragile than we give it credit.
Absolutely. And not that I would say that Jill Bolte Taylor is insane or sane. Actually, she is quite sane. But using that sort of example of how tenuous our existence is, at least in our psyche, if you look at Jill Bolte Taylor, she is the neuroanatomist who mm-hmm. witnessed her own stroke when a blood vessel exploded in the left hemisphere of her brain. She documented that in a great TED talk. If nobody's ever seen that before, it's worth checking out.
Yeah, we'll definitely put it up on the blog post accompanying this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And she, of course, she's a brain researcher. She was completely, it's very interesting to hear her talk about this because she was absolutely astounded that she recognized that she was having a stroke. And so she was sitting there as the events were unfolding, sort of tagging every single thing that her brain mm-hmm. was doing as much as she could.
It was December 10th, 1996. She woke up, discovered she was having this stroke. And 2.5 weeks later, she underwent major brain surgery to remove a golf ball-sized blood clot that was placing pressure on the language centers of the left hemisphere of her brain.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she does detail this one part of when she first started having the stroke, I guess the first 4 hours, actually,
right.
Before she was hospitalized. And she says she couldn't walk, she couldn't talk, she couldn't read or write or recall parts of her life. And she says that she essentially became an infant in a woman's body. And she goes on to explain a little bit more to the audience. She talks about how the right hemisphere is consciousness of the right here, the right now, processing what we see. What we smell and fear, it's very much part of the limbic system, which mm-hmm. is associated with emotion.
Or to get a little hippy dippy here.
It's, bring on the patchouli.
It's like the right hemisphere lives in the now, and the left
yeah.
hemisphere is the brain chatter that is worrying about the past or fearing the future. Like it's the left brain that that you're always trying to turn off when you're meditating or even when you're just like you're running or swimming or engaging in something, just trying to turn off that chatter.
Well, it's observing everything that's going on the right mm-hmm. side of the brain. Looks the right side of the brain is processing what's going on right now, but my left side of the brain is tagging and categorizing little details from what's going on right now, and it's applying it to what might happen in the future. It's worried about the future.
Yeah.
It's very much concerned with calculating intelligence, right? What constitutes me or I?
Yeah.
So
it's ego. It's tied up in just a lot of very important aspects of who we are, but also some of the more problematic, I would say.
Like it's the seat of judgment, right? So we're problematic. Yeah. One of the really cool things about this talk, I mean, there are many cool parts, but she brings out a brain and she actually, with the spinal cord attached.
Yeah, rips it right out of a person's skull.
Yeah,
another fatality.
Right, right. And she said, I told you someone in the front row is going to get it. So I don't know why they were surprised, but, but she pulls out the brain and then, an assistant brings her a brain, that was obtained by legal means. And she shows how the right and left hemisphere are truly absolutely separate. It's the corpus callosum in the middle that connects them, right?
Right.
So she's doing this to demonstrate how very different, you have two very different machines in your brain working in tandem. So the reason why she's talking about that and why we're talking a little bit more about the left and the right is that because she had that blood clot on the left hemisphere, she was losing temporary functionality in it during mm-hmm. those 4 hours and many years after, actually. And so she began to witness herself blending with the rest of the world. That was the result, is that, once she shut up that part of her brain, the right brain, the here and the now, she started to see, like, the boundaries of her body dissipate and sort of meld with the rest of the world.
Wow.
Which is
like
very
an incredibly zen type moment, like this kind of like om, universal frequency kind of a thing. She just kind of melded into the universe.
Yeah. And she was very much entranced by this and was sort of sitting there thinking like, oh, wow, my body is doing this. And then she would say her left part of her brain would start to come back online mm-hmm. and be like, you need to get help. And then her right part of her brain would say,
like, chill out,
man.
This is
so cool.
This is awesome.
Yeah. Like, I'm witnessing this about myself.
And then the other side's like, so seriously, we need to go to hospital.
Right.
Hospital.
Right. And that's what the left side of the brain just kept coming online trying to get her. And that's why it took her so very long to get to the hospital too, because she lost the ability to even read numbers. So mm-hmm. she was trying to, dial the phone and so on and so forth. So I think it's fascinating that she had that experience and that it took her 8 years to recover. And she says that the reason she knows it was 8 years, that there was the marker there, is that for 8 years after that, she experienced herself as a fluid being.
Yeah. I'm going to quote her real quick from her TED Talk. This was, the whole fluid being revelation. She says, "We are energy beings connected to one another through the consciousness of our right hemispheres as one human family. And right here, right now, we are brothers and sisters on this planet, here to make a world a better place. And in this moment, we are perfect. We are whole and we are beautiful."
And it is an incredible talk. And I will have to say that if you are uncomfortable with any of the sort of hippy-dippy right here, right now stuff, it might make you kind of cringe a little, but
I think if someone's uncomfortable with it, this is just me, but like you should really stop and try and disconnect yourself from fear for the future and worrying about the past, because there is that it's right there in your head. Each side. And if you could just give a little more emphasis to the part of you that's living in the moment, it can be phenomenally comforting.
Well, and this is what she's saying too. And the reason why I brought that up is because there is sort of like a Spockian part of me that when I was watching it, I was like, oh my goodness, she is exhibiting a lot of emotion right now. but then I was thinking about it, and she has lived in this state for so very long where she, through therapy, she finally got, both hemispheres of her brain functioning, that she does have something to talk about here that, mm-hmm. that you can learn something about living in the right part of your brain and living in the now and applying that to your life, like that it is a choice. But yes, you do have these two different machines in your brain, but there is this point of living that is accessible. That she said that is her, the main thing that she wants to tell people about her experience, is that you don't have to be, you know, caught in under the glass of your left hemisphere all the time and functioning, you know, and serving your ego all the time.
Right.
So, yeah, I thought it was a really fascinating thing. And then I did, again, like, she does sort of seem out there, but this is a woman who has been living this.
She's out there, but she's been there. You know, it's
yeah.
like, this is not somebody just saying, hey, turn off half of your brain and, you know, drift free. She's, half of her brain was turned off or, you know, for a period of time here. And she got to experience that. For realsies, you know?
Oh, and at the very end, she says something that's really intriguing. She says, okay, that here's the right part of my brain, which is one with the world, which sees this beautiful, flowing existence. And here's the left part of my brain that tells me I'm Joel Bolte Taylor, and I'm a neuroanatomist, and I'm a esteemed researcher of the brain. And which one would you pick?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's such an interesting proposition.
Yeah.
And she's not saying you have to pick. That's her whole point. But she's saying that you could, if you're bound to one part of your brain, that's a sort of choice that you could make for yourself.
Yeah. It's enlightening stuff, scientifically and I think, spiritually, if you're into that kind of thing.
So. Yeah.
Well, hey, we have some words from our listeners here in the form of emails. Well, actually, one is from Facebook, and I'll read that one first. This is a response. We received a lot of response to our Five-Fingered Evolutionary Discount podcast, which had to do with why we have five fingers and how our five fingers actually influenced our number system. So our listener, Julia, who I guess I can't read her last name, but she has like a wonderful, beautiful sounding, I don't know, Icelandic last name or something, or perhaps Greenlandic, because she's writing about Greenland. She says, by the way, the word for the number 20 in Greenlandic is Inuknalu, and I'm probably saying that wrong, but Inuknalu, which translates to whole person, 10 fingers, 10 toes, awesome language.
That's so cool. Yeah. Because in the podcast, we were talking about how the word for seven is something like one hand, two fingers.
Yeah.
Right. So that's very cool to know.
Listener Emily writes the following. I love the How Stuff Works podcast, and you've been a constant and informative companion as I'm toiling away rehabbing my house. The podcast on brain function neurology and its ability to rewire inspired me to share my experience. A few weeks before I started law school, I had a seizure caused by a cavernous anagoma. Imagine a vein with a weak spot that balloons from the pressure and then leaks or burst. The brain bleed was in my visual cortex, and after brain surgery, the most challenging part of my recovery was that I couldn't see properly. It was double vision, like a bad headache or vertigo causes. I also was missing part of my visual field, like a spot where objects would become invisible. Consequently, I had trouble judging depth and typing or reading, required nose to the screen, one-eyed closed typing. About 4 days after the surgery, I was out on a walk with my sister and all the anomalies vanished. I went to having double vision and no depth perception to seeing normally. It was instantaneous. The brain was clearly rebuilding its network and the final wire got connected. The missing spot in my eyesight also diminished but hasn't totally left. If I move my hand in front of my eyes, it has one place where it will disappear. However, the brain filled in the gaps, and unless I look for the little black hole, I would forget it was there. My recovery was fine, though a few weeks later I was diagnosed with epilepsy. Epilepsy is a really interesting condition and might make a good topic. I've always wondered how many people have hidden or exploited it. I adjusted to my new identity as an epileptic by blogging for 6 months, and her blog address is sacreddisease.blogspot.com. It's all one word, sacred disease. It has been almost 8 years since that first seizure, and I continue to love hearing more about the brain, its eccentricity, and superpowers. Thanks for the great podcast, Emily.
Yeah.
So that was really illuminating, especially given some of the stuff we were just talking about.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, too. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, I love hearing from listeners about their personal experiences with various neurological conditions or anything that could conceivably be viewed as supernatural or weird. I mean, how did people interpret this kind of thing in the past before we understood how the brain affects how things work? You know, the idea that there would be this invisible part in your sight.
Yeah, right.
It's really perplexing.
Yeah, and then I'm sure that people didn't even tell someone before just for fear of someone thinking that they might be mad, right?
Yeah, things turn invisible as I look at them.
Right, right. It's not something you would probably say 100 years ago.
Yeah. But
or even 50 years ago.
Yeah. But thanks, Emily. That was it was really awesome insight into a personal neurological experience there. And if you have experiences you want to share or you just want to see what we're up to online, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We're Blow the Mind, one word on both of those, or just go to Google and type in Blow the Mind.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and I'm a journalist. Join me on my new podcast, But We Loved, coming May 15th. Where queer elders recount the amazing history they've lived through.
In the middle of Wall Street, they stopped traffic. They were doing a die-in.
There is a right! Help, there
and
is
in the
right.
process, share little gems of wisdom for the next generation.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
You can listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.